Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
Okay, we continue our study on this subject. Sorry about all of this advertising stuff. There should still be some free copies out there of R&R, and if not, you can download them free from our site. All right. Other than God created an environment that's specifically designed to give us an opportunity to decide where we want to spend eternity, why more specifically does suffering occur? People sin. Number two, Satan exists. Okay. I must have not covered that. Was that on the other PowerPoint that we just shut down? We don't have to do them in this order, but let's go ahead and move to this one and we'll pick up Satan later. Do you realize, though, that suffering and hardship is positive? It provides beneficial purposes. And when you're going through hurt and pain, you don't think that way. How can this possibly be good? It's not pleasant. It hurts. But the Bible over and over forthrightly declares suffering has very positive, beneficial benefits and results. And here's a number of the terms that are used to describe that. Do you want to be strengthened? This is one critical way to do it. Suffering and hardship can correct us. Nobody likes to be corrected. But when you need to be corrected, if you want your soul to be saved, then are you willing to go through the correction? It can improve us. It can perfect us. Does God want us to mature? How many passages are there in the New Testament that say, grow? You come up out of the waters of baptism, you're a spiritual baby. Is that it? Or does God have equal expectation, not only of becoming a Christian, but of living the Christian life, and in so doing, mature and grow? Well, one of the stimuli for that is suffering. It can improve and perfect and mature us. It can purify us. And if we need discipline, it can discipline us. These are the passages that state this explicitly. Some of them, there's so many. James chapter 1, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Look carefully at that term trial. You know, here we're talking about encountering, bumping up against some circumstance or some person that puts you to the test. So you're being squeezed, you're being pressed because of this trial that's come your way. And you know, that trial may seem to be completely disconnected from your life, from Christianity. It's just come into your life and it doesn't really have anything to do with anything. And yet it can serve the purpose of improving you. And what the way we need to look at it is that when we're tested, when our spiritual stamina is tested, when our faith is tested, that is the means through which patience can be developed and produced in our lives. You know, when a person says, Lord, please give me more patience. You know, there was a mother that was dealing with her little two-year-old. Please give me more patience, you know. Well, how's that going to come about? Get another two-year-old. Because it's the trying of your faith that will produce that. God's not just going to miraculously, when you ask for it, drop it on you. He's going to give you circumstances that will facilitate that. And there's no shortcut. I wish there was, but there's not. So is that good or not? You know, the mother that's dealing with that two-year-old at that moment doesn't, you know, this is a real hassle. But even in the midst of that, there is good being done, according to the Bible. You and I wouldn't believe this or know it if God didn't tell us. And notice how as you go on then, It has its perfect work. To what end? It perfects and completes us spiritually. You know, most people tend to be kind of lazy. And so tell me what's the least I can do to get to heaven. Okay, I'll be dunked, but I don't want to do much more. Well, apart from that attitude, think about that. We have got to muster the spiritual desire and gumption to want to grow and to be more like Christ, to reflect our Lord more clearly to people, to develop our spiritual capacity to a greater degree, to expand it, to expand our spiritual appetites, all of that progressing toward life in the eternal realm. And here's how to do it. God's given us the formulas by which these things can be accomplished. What about Romans 5, where Paul said essentially the same thing, only instead of using the word trial, he uses the word tribulation. And notice this, we glory in it. Now here's the fellow that, remember, was beaten numerous times by the Jews, according to Jewish law, 40 stripes, flogged. And I can't help but think about, he said he spent a day and night in the deep. So you're talking about out on the ocean, trying to stay afloat, darkness comes, are there any sharks below me? That'd be horrible. He went through a lot of things like that. And yet he can turn around and say by inspiration, I glory in those things. Why? Because they produce perseverance, which then develops our character. And then, by the way, strengthens our hope of heaven. You're telling me that going through hardship and weathering it and then becoming stronger spiritually and more patient increases your sense of expecting to go to heaven? That's exactly what it does. So the less developed we are, the more immature we are, the more doubts we're going to have about whether we're even going to be saved. The more we expand and develop our spiritual person, the more confidence we have. I'm on the right track here. God's going to accept me. Valuable insights. Hebrews 12. This is the comparison to children. How many of you were spanked as a child by a parent? You know, the older generation, I'm baby boomer, but it was that World War II generation that was really the last generation that had all those values literally ensconced in our civilization. If you could have polled the entire World War II generation, were you spanked, whipped, switched, and taken to the woodshed? I'm confident above 95% would say, duh! How many of you that lived that kind of a life, a childhood, remember the words, bend over that bed? And when you did so, did you say, oh, Dad, thank you, I can't wait, please bring it on? And yet, that's what this passage says. He says, you know, at the moment, that kind of correction is, the King James uses the term grievous. It's painful, it's not pleasant, not one bit. But if you will endure it, notice that implies an attitude. A child that's disciplined, and when the discipline is over and the child sticks his lip out, that child didn't endure the discipline. Now that's like the little boy that kept standing up during services and the mother kept setting him back down, and about the third time he stayed. But he said, well, I may be sitting down on the outside, but I'm standing up on the inside. See that attitude? God's not pleased with that attitude in adults. So we have to endure chastening. We have to be willing to assimilate it. Allow it to have the positive effect that it's intended to have. God's not wanting to just torment people. He's allowing us to go through suffering for our value, for our benefit. So, It is one indication that we are accepted as sons, children. What's the corollary to that? If you're not disciplined, you're not going through suffering, God doesn't have much hope for you. In fact, the King James, remember, uses the term, you don't hear it much these days, but the word bastard. Newer versions translate it illegitimate. That's not even a stigma in our society today. For most of history, it was. We have in our society kind of an underclass that have been exacerbated by welfare and the like, where they don't marry. The men go from woman to woman, and they just, you know, they're living, producing numerous illegitimate children. Well, see, even the Bible teaches that's horrible. That's not a good thing. And in the spiritual realm, if you're not being disciplined and raised and cared for, that's what you are. You're an illegitimate child. Do you want to be treated like a son, a child, God's child? Then you have to endure chastening, hardship and suffering. Fathers that correct their children do the best they can. You know, a good father is wanting to do what's right and discipline correctly. There are some parents that don't. You know, the children bother them and they knock them around, take a cigarette and touch their skin and burn them and abuse them. But even good parents are simply doing the best they can, but they are humans. So they make mistakes. Children tend to fixate on those mistakes, don't they? Well, I remember when you did this to me. But do you not see that God never makes such a mistake? Human fathers did the best they could, what seemed right to them. But God always disciplines for our profit. Why? So that we can be partakers of His holiness. What greater thing could you possibly hope to get in this world? Except to partake of God's holiness. And then notice, it will yield the peaceable fruit of righteousness. But you have to be willing to be trained by it and go through it. People who say, you know what, Christianity is too hard. It's too restrictive. I just don't want to live that way. Okay, you're cutting yourself out of a process that will make you a person who is far more contented than anybody outside could be. They don't have the capacity to find ultimate contentment and fulfillment and satisfaction in life. They can't do it. They can just distract themselves with a lot of things they're interested in. But you go this spiritual route. It's not easy. I don't believe the Bible. I realize Jesus said, my yoke is easy. But he could not have meant by that, that you're not ever going to have any pain or suffering or hardship. Living the Christian life. You know, Jesus described it in Matthew 7 as narrow, rigid. You know, in that sense, it's grueling. It doesn't really take a lot of effort just to say, you know what, I'm just going to let it all hang out, live the way I want. But the person who says, man, I'm going to try to subdue my flesh, bring it under the control of my mind, which is informed by the gospel, and I'm going to deny myself and be restrictive in my conduct, in my behavior, and even my thinking. That's hard. But those who commit themselves to that approach are going to have benefits all along the way and far more in eternity. 1 Peter 1. Have this read, did we not? What a great passage. You know, this probably the key word of 1 Peter, suffering. It's used 15 or 16 times. Here these Christians were going through various trials. And were they grieved? Yeah. You have been grieved. But notice that the genuineness of your faith being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it's tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory. And then 1 Peter 4, don't think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. I see people out in the world and they really are bewildered about making sense of such things. The Bible says, you Christians, don't be that way. We're forearmed. We understand what's going on here. And notice, what will be the outcome of this? Glad with exceeding joy. If we could get our children to understand that no matter how long they live on this planet, even if they go all the way to 70 or 80, 90, this is all really temporary and short. And in comparison to eternity, but a brief moment. It's so easy for us to not really feel that there's joy and ultimate bliss awaiting us when you're going through everyday trials and temptations and difficulties. You got to keep going back and listening to what God says on the matter. It's the only way to keep it ever before us and to be able to weather the storms of life. You know, this concept of trying our faith, several of the writers of the Bible play on this concept of how throughout the millennia, humans have, you know, dug ore out of the ground, out of mountains, be it silver or gold or whatever. And these precious metals have to be refined. They have to be purified. And so smelting is what is done in order to make that so. And this metaphor is used over and over, especially in the Old Testament, repeatedly referring to Israel going through all the hardship that they were going through, and God would say, I'm purifying you. I'm putting you through the process of being refined. Passage after passage teaches that. When I was a child and grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, my father worked for the Borden Milk Company, and he drove wholesale, which means we delivered to stores and restaurants, not to homes. And we would go west toward California, out in the desert, where there were some little towns out there. And off in the distance were the typical mountains in Phoenix is called the Valley because there are mountains all around it. They're off in the distance. You've heard of Purple Mountains Majesty? They look purple off in the distance, which made these white streaks on the sides of those mountains appear all the more obvious, visible. They look like big white gashes in the side of the mountain, way off in the distance. And I asked my father what that is. And he said, that's the International Harvester Proving Grounds. That's where International would take all of their large dirt moving equipment and tractors and stuff and try them out. Because those mountains were rough. I mean, jagged rocks and all kinds of cacti and everything. And I actually went online and found these pictures from the 50s. Well, that's what life is for a Christian. This is our proving grounds. Revelation 2. The devil's going to throw some of you in prison, that you may be tested. That you may be tested. They weren't thrown into prison because they had violated some law that has as its punishment, you're going to go to prison. They were being put into a condition of suffering unjustly. And Jesus told John, that's your test. You willing to go through it? If Jesus came up to you today and said, there are going to be some things happen to you over the next few months. Not going to be pleasant. But I'm telling you ahead, these are tests. You better brace yourself and be willing to be tested. What would be your reaction to Jesus if he said that to you? Because that's what he says. Throughout history, Christians have been tested by going through circumstances that are unpleasant, that are not wanted, they're not desired, but we must endure them. You remember the illustration that Eliphaz gave to Job. You know, he was pounding Job like the other two and saying, you need to just submit to this. You deserve all this. But he did use a great illustration. He said, This is like a surgeon. God is really functioning like a surgeon here. You know, if you go into surgery, you're put on a cold table and you're rolled into a place with all these lights. And depending on what the operation is, this doctor, this surgeon is going to manhandle your body. Now, let's suppose you have to have a bypass surgery. He's going to take, you know, a knife and split you open and retractors, pull your chest apart. And, you know, your breastbone there has to be split too with a saw. I mean, what doctors do is brutal. If you did that out on the street, they'd put you in jail. That's barbaric. You can't stick knives into people. But in the hands of a skilled surgeon, its purpose is not to inflict pain and suffering, but to heal, to improve, to make that individual's life better and capable of surviving illness. Isn't that a great illustration? Happy is the man whom God corrects. So don't despise the chastening of the Almighty. It is true he'll bruise you, but he'll bind you up too. And it is true that he will wound you, but his hands will make you whole. Well, that's not pleasant to go through. Even as it's not pleasant to go through what doctors put you through. You know, I had a detached retina several years ago, and he said, "You want to be put to sleep or stay awake?" Duh. Especially when I found out what he's going to do. He stuck something in my eye that moved. It was a little saw that moved. I don't know how many revolutions per second. It's, you know, hundreds. Chopped up, he said, all of the fluid in my eye. I forgot what he called it. Kind of a gel. I mean, chopped it all up and sucked it all out. And then took my eyeball out. That's what he said he did. He took it out. And before it was over with, after he put the retina back in place, he put a belt around. I have a belt around my eye, a belt, you know, like the kind you cinch up. He cinched it up. You think I want to be awake for all that? But I'm glad he did it. You know, just 50 years ago, if I were living, I'd be blind in one eye. They didn't have that capability, that technology. So they do some things that create shock and distress to the body. Imagine if we didn't have anesthesia. But all of these actions are calculated to save life and make well. Can we not see God in that same light? Why would we ever balk when we're going through hardship in life? See, it's easy for us to sit here in a sterile environment philosophically to say, yeah, you know, oh, I could see we should submit to that and not have a problem. But you know, when you're actually feeling the pain, it's easy to see things differently. That's why we've got to get this in our minds fully embedded so that when it happens, we go, oh, yeah, not unexpected, not unexpected. Proverbs 29, parental discipline occurs in two forms, the rod and rebuke. Oral, constant, training, teaching, admonishing. Both indispensable to a well-rounded upbringing. And according to Hebrews 12, that's what the Father of our spirits is doing. We didn't father or mother the spirits of our children. We just authored their bodies. Our genetics created their bodies. But God authored the spirit, infused that into that conceived human being. And therefore, he is the one that has the right to parent us. And you remember the terminology of Proverbs 3. Don't detest God's correction. He loves us. Just as a father in the Son whom he delights. And this is the passage we looked at a moment ago, but now from the perspective of a father. Shall we not be much more readily in subjection to the Father of our spirits and live? He's not talking about physical life. Human fathers can't ultimately provide spiritual life. They can try to keep a child alive, physically, but God can preserve our spirits. 1 Corinthians 10, no temptation. Now insert into that term right there, temptation. Trial, hardship, stress, suffering, anguish. There's not anything like that that overtakes you that hadn't hit somebody else too at some point. It's so easy for us to think, you know, like Elijah, I'm the only one that's having to go through this. That's not true. Quit the why and get real about reality. God is faithful. He's not going to allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. What a tremendous promise that is. When you're actually in the midst of something in the throes of affliction and you're thinking, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Read that passage. You can. Well, how do I know? Because the magnitude of what you're experiencing will not be allowed to get above that point at which God knows you can't handle. Isn't that reassuring? He will with the temptation also make the way of escape. So look at this. Everything you and I go through, many others have gone through before us. God is faithful. We can count on Him. He's trustworthy. He's with us in this. He will make us able. That is, it won't be beyond our ability to handle. And He will enable us to escape. Now look carefully at this. You mean like escape the suffering, get the suffering to stop? Get away from it? No. Because He says that you may be able to bear it. You gotta go through it. So that escape means escape failing to endure, allowing it to disrupt us and cause us to become unfaithful. No, you can hang in there and get through it. You can go through it. People who expect God to exempt them from suffering are being unrealistic and they don't know God. But God turns around and says, yeah, you got to go through this, but I'll make it where you can handle it. But see again, it's your decision. It's your decision. Ask yourself this question. Would you rather go to a funeral this afternoon, or would you rather go home and watch TV? Would you rather go to a funeral or go to a ball game or a party or get together, a fellowship, and eat food? Come on, who would answer the funeral? But here's what God says on the matter. You need to choose the funeral. Look at this statement by Solomon. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. Why? How is that great? How is that positive and useful to me? Well, because we're all headed there. You need to be reminded of that. Boy, children especially. See, they're young. They think, man, I got my whole life. Not necessarily. We're all headed that way. And we need to take that to heart. See why it's better to go to a funeral than a party? Well, what good's a party going to do you? Well, it's just physically stimulating. It's fun. Okay, how's that going to help you get to heaven? How's that going to be conducive to developing your spiritual capacities in anticipation of eternity? The funeral will. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. What psychologist or author of any psychological book would say that? But God says it. Experiencing heartache is not bad. It's better than happy all the time and just nothing bothered. The one will prepare you and fit you for eternity. The other won't. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. You know, Americans have more in our culture, more mirth, more amusement, more pleasure, more fun than ever before, I believe, in human history. There is more that is in conflict with a spiritual lifestyle than ever before. Now, we've got to be conscious of that size it up and not be drawn in by Satan's efforts to delude us. All right, ask these questions. Do you want to be made a better person? I mean, really, do we really want to be made better, or are we pretty much content with who we are? Do you want to be matured? Do you want to be strengthened? Do you want to be improved? Are you willing to be purified? Perfected? Do you want to go through discipline? I mean, I realize that we don't like the negative. I'm talking about mentally and emotionally. Are you prepared and receptive and submissive to being disciplined? Well, then God will help us. And let us thank Him. Let us thank Him. I realize when you were bent over the bed, you didn't have the attitude, "Oh, thank you, Dad, for loving me enough to beat the daylights out of me. I'm so grateful." But I tell you, I've met a lot of older people in their 80s and 90s that spoke with such tenderness about Mama and Papa, who brought the blood. I had one lady tell me that. Used a switch on her leg. She said, "He used to bring the blood. He'd be in jail today." But she spoke of him with reverence, respect, and deep gratitude. That's what we ought to do to God, no matter what we have to go through. Thank you for your kind attention. In our final session, we'll bring up three other sub-causes very quickly.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.